It may have escaped the notice of many of us, but yesterday was an important religious celebration for many of our sister and brother Christians, perhaps millions of them. And I dare say it probably did escape the notice of most of us in this room. And it celebrates a remarkable story that you may have heard some portions of, but it is now nearly 500 years old, the story. And it's the story of how on December 12th of 1531, an indigenous Mexican peasant man, Juan Diego, during his early morning walk from his home village to Mexico City, he came to the slopes of the hill near Mexico City called Tepeyac. And on that hill, he saw a vision of a young girl, 15 or 16 years of age, and she was a mestizo young woman, one of mixed race, indigenous and European. And he saw her surrounded by light, and she spoke to him in his native language, Nahuatl. And she asked for him to build a church in her honor on that site. Now, from her words and her appearance, Juan Diego identified her as the Virgin Mary, an appearance of the Mother of Jesus on Tepeyac Hill. So Diego hastened and told the story to the Spanish bishop, Zumarraga, and the bishop directed him to go back to this woman and ask for a miraculous sign to prove the claim that he had made to the bishop. So Diego returned to the hill, and the young woman told him to gather some of the flowers from the top of the hill. There were an abundance of flowers in the middle of winter, quite uncommon, and among them, among the flowers, most notably, the roses of Castile. And the young woman herself arranged the flowers in the cloak of Juan Diego, in his tilmac. Now Juan Diego returned to the bishop, prepared to show the bishop that this unseasonable abundance of unusual flowers was the sign. And when he opened his cloak and spilled out the flowers, in their place where they had been, on the fabric of his cloak, was the imprinted image of that young woman, now famously known as Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe, Our Lady of Guadalupe. I believe we have an image, do we? There we go. Very familiar to us now. Our Lady of Guadalupe is a religious and cultural and ethnic symbol. And the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe, December 12th, is celebrated not only by Guadalupanas, those devotees of the Virgin Guadalupe, Guadalupanas far beyond Mexico. There are chapels and shrines to her honor that stretch from the southernmost tip of South America to the northernmost Catholic parish in Alaska is a parish for Our Lady of Guadalupe. From the American Southwest to the very east of New Brunswick, Canada, she is called the patroness of the Americas and even beyond. The Virgin of Guadalupe is named the patroness of the Philippines. She is a symbol of spiritual significance and cultural and ethnic importance, most prominently in Mexico, but because of her mestizo, her mixed race appearance, and that she spoke in the indigenous language, and in her image are symbols that combine both the old religion and the new religion, she is viewed as a bridge not only between heaven and earth, but a sacred bridge and a blend of cultures. In fact, the Trappist monastery outside of Newburgh, just south of here, which I have often been to on personal retreat, is in fact a community of Guadalupana Trappist monks. It is Our Lady of Guadalupe chapel and retreat center. And they have a beautiful modern chapel, and in it hangs a huge tapestry. My best guess is it's at least 20 feet tall, a huge tapestry bearing the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And every evening when they conclude their final evening office of prayer and chant, they face the image of Our Lady and sing a hymn as their closing prayer. And I recall on my last visit there, one afternoon I was sitting alone in the chapel, meditating or my mind wandering. It goes back and forth, depending. We'll call it meditation. And I was seated in one of the pews in the chapel, and while I was there, a young family entered the chapel. I guessed them to be a family, a mother and father with two young children who could not have been older than 6 years, the older of the two. And after they made the sign of the cross, they knelt in the back of the chapel, and they walked on their knees to the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, where they reverently remained on their knees in prayer for several minutes. Now, their spiritual devotion may be in many ways different from mine or from yours, but it is deeply moving, inspiring, and I believe the centuries-old practice of millions around the world is instructive for us in many ways. I would ask you to pray with me, please. God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be a delight in your sight. God, you who are our rock, our strength, and our redeemer. Amen. No preparation for Christmas can be complete without spending time reflecting upon the story of Mary, the mother of Jesus. In some churches, like the one in which I was raised in my childhood, it was the only time of year that we paid any attention to her whatsoever, pretty much. And depending upon the tradition in which you may have been raised, if any tradition at all, we may have very differing experiences of Mary, the mother of Jesus. For most Protestants, Mary is simply the mother of Jesus. Yes, a pivotal character in the salvation story, a woman of remarkable faith and an exceptional experience of God, deserving of abiding respect and even as a spiritual model. But for most Protestants, she is not likely anything more, certainly nothing less. But others raised in faithful Catholic backgrounds, Mary may be the primary face of divine compassion, a living and active still divine person to whom you pray, who prays for you. She is the Blessed Virgin Mary. The Eastern Catholic Church, the millions of Catholic Christians in the East, have given her the name for centuries, Theotokos, the God-bearer, the exalted mother of God. And we sometimes forget in Islam, Mary, who in Arabic, the name is Miriam, Mary is considered the most righteous woman in history, and she's the only woman who is named in the Quran, and she is mentioned in the Quran more frequently than she is in our Christian Bible. And there is a prayer niche dedicated to Miriam, commonly found in most mosques. And still others, even if they're not from the traditions that I just spoke, this ancient and enduring spiritual desire to connect with, to venerate the divine feminine, Mary, for many, is the great mother of all of us. In some ways, a face of the great goddess herself. So there are lots of ways you can find yourself in relation to this, in some ways, one simple person, but very complicated as well. But every Advent, as we get ready for Christmas, we do and must turn our attention to Mary. Now, if you remember your gospel stories, you will recall that Luke begins not by telling about the conception and birth of Jesus, But the gospel, according to Luke, first begins with the story of the conception of John the Baptist, John the Baptizer, before the angel Gabriel appears to Mary in the stories that we hear today. He first visits the priest Zechariah and quite dramatically announces that in their childless old age, he and his wife Elizabeth would have a son. Now, today's story are those famous passages about Mary. The first one, which is called the Annunciation. The angel Gabriel arrives and announces to Mary in Nazareth, "Greetings, favored one." Rightly alarmed, wouldn't you be a little alarmed if an angel appeared and says, "Greetings, favored one"? I'm sure exactly with Enrique's voice as well. What is going on? The angel announces that Mary had been chosen by God to bear a child. Now, after wondering aloud how this could possibly be, being that she was a virgin, she then hears the answer from the angel that her elderly relative Elizabeth was now pregnant. And the angel adds this famous quote, "Nothing is impossible with God." Nothing is impossible with God. And Mary responds. And we do not know whether her response was with serenity and confidence. I think we like to imagine, you know, the serene and confident Mary. But perhaps she responded with great fear and trembling and says, "Here I am, the servant of God. Let it be with me according to your word. Here I am, let it be." She says, yes. The second scene that follows, Mary quickly goes to visit her cousin Elizabeth in the hill country, who is already several months pregnant. Pregnant with a son who's going to turn out to be John the Baptizer. And Elizabeth greets Mary with this enthusiastic, prophetic greeting. In fact, Elizabeth is often called the first evangelist, the first who recognizes the meaning of the child that Mary is carrying. "Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb." Her response is that inspiration of the great prayer of the church, the Hail Mary. Elizabeth also says that the baby in her own womb leaped for joy at the sound of Mary's greeting. And in response, Mary bursts into this song of praise that has been set to music through the ages. In fact, the first song we sang is a setting and an adaptation of her song. "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior." Mary's song is one of the oldest hymns in our Christian tradition. It is a 2,000-year-old hymn. There are some scholars who are, in fact, a little skeptical if Mary spoke the words herself, because there are early manuscripts that have Elizabeth singing the hymn to Mary. But whoever sang it, whichever woman sang it to the other, it tells us some very important things that Luke and early Christians understood, if not something that both Mary and Elizabeth understood themselves. Mary and her child were a fulfillment of ancient promises that had been made to their people, and that fulfillment was going to change the world as they knew it. There it is. That's the core story of Mary in our tradition. Now, there are scores, if not hundreds, of devout speculations and theological elaborations upon this story of Mary. But briefly consider a very human Mary, a brown-skinned, illiterate, unwed, pregnant teenage girl of an oppressed and marginalized people in an occupied country. And she said yes to God. Said yes to God in the face of all of the fears and risks that she would have faced. It is no wonder that Juan Diego's vision of the Virgin of Guadalupe remains so compelling to the people of the Americas. She looks like us. She speaks like us. She knows our sufferings. Maybe I can say yes to God too. So among the most remembered words in the story that we hear today are those words, I think, the words of Gabriel, that he speaks to Mary after she wonders aloud how such a thing could happen. And Gabriel says, "Nothing is impossible with God." This is a story about impossible possibilities, as I steal a phrase directly from author Brian McLaren. Steal a phrase and a sermon title directly from Brian McLaren. I will credit him for it. Impossible possibilities. So many of the stories in the Bible, let's face it, so many of the Bible stories, including this one, the appearance of an angel and the announcement of a virgin birth, are utterly unbelievable and completely impossible to us. But I don't know about you. I want to live in a world that isn't limited by what I think is possible. A world that isn't limited by what I think is possible or what I believe to be impossible. I want to live in a world where the impossible is possible. I recall about 5 years ago, I was interviewed by a woman who was doing a book. She was a straight ally who had a gay son. And she wanted to collect the stories of just, I guess, a number of selected gay people, and I guess I qualify. But she wanted my story about being an out gay Christian pastor. And I remembered in that interview, we talked about same-sex marriage. Now recall, this was about 5 years ago. And it was about not quite a year ago that I received a copy of the final book, which had finally been published last year. And as I read through my interview, including things I wished I hadn't said or said, oh, that was good, I'll have to remember I said that. I was like, I have to write that down. Oh, somebody did, thank you. But in our conversation about same-sex marriage, I said, I know it will happen someday, but I don't believe I will live to see it. That was only a few years ago. I believed such a thing was impossible in my own lifetime. We do live in a world where the impossible is possible. At least what we think is impossible is possible. If we pay attention to the words that we sing or that we hear when we hear the Magnificat, Mary's song of praise, they carry that message. It's not just a song of praise. It's a song that proclaims what we even perhaps still think is impossible. Certainly what she was proclaiming was impossible, but we still sometimes think it's impossible. Do we think it is impossible that the proud and haughty will be scattered, that the powerful tyrants can be dethroned? Do we sometimes think that's impossible even right now? Do we believe it impossible that the lowly and the needy might be lifted up, that the hungry can be filled with more than enough food to go around, that there are still hungry people? Is it impossible that the hungry be fed? In a world of violence and fear of violence, an ever greater yawning gap between rich and poor, despair over the brokenness in our world, that the world could change seems impossible, at least as impossible as this young virgin giving birth, at least that impossible. Reverend Elder Nancy Wilson, who is the moderator for Metropolitan Community Churches worldwide, often tells the story of what she believes to be the founding of MCC. As we know, the founder was Reverend Troy Perry in 1968. And Nancy Wilson says she actually believes that God called many, many, many people to start something like Metropolitan Community Churches, to start a church that would welcome gay and lesbian, bi and trans people exactly who they are. She believes God called many, many people. Troy was just the first one who said yes. I think that applies to Mary. When I think about Mary, I wonder, did or did not God try for years, perhaps centuries, calling over and over and over again, "Blessed are you, God has selected you to give birth to something new." And Mary was the one who said yes. If the angel's answer to Mary was in any way true, that nothing is impossible with God, and if Mary was the first one who said yes to that invitation, how many of God's possibilities remain unborn because we believe that they're impossible? How many of God's possibilities are miscarried because we fail to say yes? Advent is a season of preparing for God's presence to be among us. Emmanuel, God with us in flesh. God is ready, willing, yearning, and eager to come into our world. God's impossible possibilities call to us over and over again, waiting for us, like Mary, to say, "Here I am. Yes, let it be." And come bursting upon the world through our lives, through our bodies. The impossible becomes possible because nothing is impossible with God.